7 wedding etiquette rules that you can kiss goodbye. That's coming up next on the Wedding Planning Podcast. Hey friends, it's Cara, and I believe that every engaged couple should enjoy the expertise of a down-to-earth, honest, and professional wedding planner. Join me each week for straightforward wedding planning advice designed to streamline and simplify your wedding plans. To learn more about how I can help take the expense and overwhelm out of your wedding planning, visit weddingplanningpodcast.co/vault. Enjoy the show. Why, hello there, and welcome to today's show. Thank you, as always, for joining me here today. Are you feeling like you're drowning in wedding etiquette and guidelines and rules and what people say you, quote, should and should not be doing? Everyone has an opinion on invitation wording, whether or not a cash bar is tacky, should you allow children to come to the wedding, what traditions should absolutely be included in the ceremony. It goes on and on. Today, I wanted to have a deep conversation where we can take a step back and essentially take a deep breath and know that there is nothing that you, quote, should be doing or should not be doing. It's all centered around you and your partner doing what feels best for the two of you. Now, I appreciate that you're listening from all different backgrounds, regions of our country, and even other regions of the world, different cultures. What's the norm in New York City may be entirely opposite in Charleston and completely unheard of in Los Angeles. Part of the inspiration for today's episode is my husband and I coming from two very different parts of the country and our separate expectations of what should and shouldn't happen at a wedding. So if we were to rewind back to our wedding planning, which was in 2009, we actually got married in 2010, we came from two very different backgrounds that saw the process of wedding planning and also the unfolding of the wedding day from two very different points of view. Where my now husband John is from, it's totally normal to spend tens of thousands of dollars on a huge wedding for 300 of your closest family and friends. Your parents invite their coworkers and every single person they've ever known. It feels like everybody has a humongous family. In that situation, it's very common that the bride's family picks up the tab. It's absolutely unheard of to have a cash bar, to not ride in a limo from the ceremony to the reception with your entire wedding party, and to not invite children. Where I'm from and where my family is from, pretty much everything is exactly opposite of that. I have a really small family, and celebrating your wedding reception with a couple hundred dollars in the basement of the church with no booze is pretty normal. Where things get tricky as we're wedding planning is when our expectations of what a wedding should look like conflict with our budget, our styles, and our personalities. And then, of course, an added layer of difficulty arises when you and your partner come from two completely different backgrounds. For example, one of you may think that spending $10,000 on a wedding photographer is completely reasonable, and the other one of you may think that spending $10,000 total on the entire wedding is a ton of money. But no matter where you're from, I am a very firm believer in your wedding day being an expression and a celebration of you and your partner, not what anyone thinks you should do or what any wedding rule book says you should do or any etiquette guide or anything that anyone else says in a wedding chat room. At the end of the day, you're making a really special commitment to one another and looking to celebrate the occasion with your loved ones. That's it. So simple. With that said, let's look at some wedding etiquette rules with a fresh set of eyes. Forget about what everyone else is doing, and let's open up the possibilities way beyond that so that you can plan a wedding day that you feel great about. Please know, believe, and trust as we launch into today's episode that you truly have the support from me to ditch what everyone else is doing and craft your wedding day your way. No, this doesn't mean being blatantly rude or disagreeable to your family or your future in-laws, or sneaking behind your partner's back to sabotage something that you know they really want. I'm not suggesting that you go on a bridezilla rampage and just start pissing off all the people who you love. You do need to continuously deploy common sense, compromise, and understanding throughout your engagement. However, these commonly held beliefs or etiquette rules can definitely, by all means, be reinvented to suit you and your situation. With that, let's get started with wedding etiquette rule number one, and this is really kind of more of a general category, and that is surrounding your wedding invitations. I have a couple of invitation rules to share that can be completely disregarded. The first rule is that you have to send formal paper invitations and they need to cost a ton of money. Not true. The second rule, and that's in air quotes every time I say it pretty much this whole episode, the second is that evites are tacky. And then the third area of wedding invitations that I want you to take a look at with a fresh new set of eyes is that there's a right and a wrong way to word things on your invitation. By extension of that, that the wording needs to be really formal and really stuffy and sound really outdated. No, 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 and no. I'll touch on each really quickly, but for a full episode dedicated to keeping your wedding invitations and the entire process really simple, you can go back through your podcast feed to the show that was released on February 13th of 2019. And there's also a blog post that goes along with it that can be found at weddingplanningpodcast.co/invite. Do you have to send formal, really expensive paper invitations? Absolutely not. You can send paper invitations that are super simple and really affordable. The point of an invitation is to tell your invited guests who, what, when, where, and why. And that's it. It doesn't need to be fancy. Are evites tacky? In this day and age, email communication, text communication, Facebook threads, groups that you create on Facebook, all of that has become so normal. I see no reason why not to extend that out to your wedding invitations. As for the wording on your invitations, in my opinion, it should feel really natural and it should flow and it should communicate exactly what I just touched on. If you want to use a more formal, more traditional style of wording, then by all means, Google search some invitation wording outlines and suggestions and just do what feels comfortable to you. Wedding etiquette rule number two is that a wedding should consist of certain traditions that are always included within the ceremony and also the reception. So here we're talking your garter toss, the whole ceremonious cake cutting, first dances, doing a unity candle during your ceremony, having your closest relatives or friends do readings during the ceremony, doing a money dance, appointing ushers, flower girls, ring bearers. This list could go on and on. If you're finding yourself planning the entire reception timeline around a bunch of traditions that are completely meaningless to you, then let's take a step back. I have two personal stories to share from our wedding. The first one is surrounding the garter toss. Why on earth would you reach up my dress in front of everyone and throw a garter to all the men in the audience? What even is a garter? And why on earth would I be actually wearing one? Now, of course, I get it. This is a tradition. This is something that people do. I know that. But in hindsight, That moment at our reception was one of the more awkward moments of my life in terms of where do I look when John's head is up my wedding dress? What should I be doing with my hands? Should I be laughing? It was awkward. And had we paused and thought about this, I probably would have omitted that, but we did it because we thought everyone did it, and what's a wedding reception without a garter toss? The second example of this, had I to go back and do it all over again, that I definitely would have scratched, is the money dance. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar with this tradition or this custom, it is very popular in all of the weddings that I had ever been to growing up. And in essence, the concept is the bride and groom collect cash from the guests, and the guest spends 2 to 3 minutes dancing with you and having a personal one-on-one conversation. And then that cash is typically used, I think, for covering honeymoon expenses. Although, I mean, in reality, who knows what people use it for? That's not the point. The point is that in hindsight, when I think about the premise of inviting people to a celebration and then asking them to pay you money so that they can spend a minute or two having a one-on-one conversation with you, I'm a little bit embarrassed that we actually did this. And please, let me say right here, I have absolutely no judgment if you are planning to do a money dance and if it feels natural and right to you and your situation. And this is a widely embraced tradition within your family and friends. I am not judging what anybody is doing on their wedding day ever. But in hindsight, again, we never even considered not doing one. This is reason number 1,000,001 why I really wish a wedding planning podcast had been around at the time. And I had someone telling me, hey, Kara, you don't have to participate in a tradition that feels completely nonsensical or awkward or ridiculous to you. If it doesn't feel comfortable, then don't do it. I'll be right back with 5 more wedding etiquette rules that we can kiss goodbye after a quick word from today's show sponsors. Let's face it, no one likes zero of anything. Imagine having 0 wedding guests at your wedding, 0 food at your reception, 0 communication in the days leading up with your vendors. Complete disaster, right? Having 0 of anything is hardly ever a good thing unless we're talking Zebit. That's Z-E-B-I-T. And they'll change your whole perspective on 0 forever. You already know that weddings are really expensive, and so is setting up a new home. I love that Zebit gives you access to interest-free credit for big purchases, like name brand appliances to furnish your new place or to make upgrades to your existing one. Zebit gives you a better credit option and lets you buy what you need and pay over time interest-free. That's right, 0 interest. With Zebit, there's 0 cost to join, 0 membership fees, and 0 late fees. Zebit does not check your credit score, which is especially helpful if you're in the process of buying a new home. This also means there is 0 impact on your credit score. You'll enjoy access to a huge marketplace of everyday items at everyday prices. Shop more than 50,000 products from electronics to furniture, appliances, and more from brands like Apple, Samsung, Cuisinart, and more. Shop with confidence knowing that Zebit has a 5-star rating on Trustpilot and they've earned the trust of over 1 million customers who shop on Zebit. Sign up for Zebit today at zebit.com/wedding and get $2,500 credit to shop the Zebit marketplace at 0 interest and 0 cost to join. That's zebit.com/wedding for $2,500 of interest-free credit. zebit.com/wedding. Today's show is brought to you by our friends at The Big Fake Wedding. The Big Fake Wedding is the ultimate wedding experience. Appearing in 30 cities across the country, you can be a guest at a perfectly planned fake wedding. You'll see wedding vendors in action, meet them in person, and experience all the fun of being a guest at an unforgettable wedding. Gone are the days of traditional expos and bridal shows. You are looking for an unforgettable, fun experience, and the Big Fake Wedding provides just that, all while taking the stress out of planning your special day. Now, of course, planning your actual wedding is really important, but our friends at the Big Fake Wedding also believe in planning your marriage. This event is meant to be an emotional reminder of that, as you get to watch a real-life couple renew their wedding vows right in front of your eyes, all while meeting the highest quality local vendors and enjoying drinks, food, and dancing. You'll experience the best of the best with a small and intimate vendor team who has put together the wedding that you're watching unfold right before your eyes. And not to mention all the great wedding swag and exclusive discounts that you get. There are still 18 Big Fake Weddings left in 2019, and they're happening everywhere from Nashville and Los Angeles to Chicago, Washington, D.C., Dallas, and more. Grab tickets while they last by visiting thebigfakewedding.com. And don't forget to use the code WEDDING to get $10 off your ticket. That website again is thebigfakewedding.com and save $10 with promo code WEDDING. Back to the show. Okay, welcome back, and let's move into wedding etiquette rule that you probably have heard. I know I've heard it a billion times, that hosting a cash bar is tacky. So in other words, making your guests pay for their own drinks is, quote, tacky. My take on this, and it's a pretty strong, I have very strong feelings about it. You know what's tacky? Tacky is going into debt for a wedding that is way more expensive than what you can actually afford. If picking up the tab for 200 people to drink bottomless booze all night long is way outside the scope of what you can afford to host, then making people buy their own drinks is not tacky. Planning a wedding is not a contest between you and your friends, or you and your family members, or you and any other wedding you've been to. If you've been to a wedding where the couple and their families dropped $150,000 and pulled out all the stops, that's fine, but it has nothing to do with you and your wedding and what your wedding budget is and how much money you can afford to spend on it. So if guests paying for their own beer and wine is the way that you need to host your wedding in order to make it affordable to you, that is not tacky. There are also a ton of options that exist between a cash bar and a hosted bar. For example, you could do no bar. There's a huge wide gray area here. And I would really encourage you to check out the dry wedding episode that aired back on February 20th. In that show, we reviewed lots of ideas on ways to plan for an affordable bar. And that bar may or may not include alcohol, as you can probably gather by the title of the episode, Dry Wedding. It was centered around hosting with zero alcohol whatsoever, which is obviously a much, much cheaper route to go. But again, there is a gray area, and it's huge in terms of ways that you can incorporate some different tactics and techniques into hosting versus not hosting the bar. So definitely check out that episode if you want some more information on that. Wedding rule number 4, and I left out etiquette because it doesn't really have anything to do with etiquette, but this expectation we all have as a society at large, every single one of us is to blame, the expectation that weddings should be expensive. Guess what? Your wedding does not have to be expensive. I really want to encourage you to have an open mind about all the various ways that you could celebrate. And those definitely don't have to include sitting down for an expensive formal dinner with 250 people and picking up a tab that exceeds the six-figure price tag. There are tons of ways that you can celebrate your wedding that don't have to be expensive. So let's all agree that we can shake this feeling of ickiness that we have to be spending tens of thousands of dollars to host this phenomenal, unforgettable wedding for all of our family and friends. Don't burden yourself with that. Your wedding doesn't have to be expensive. And this flows really seamlessly into wedding rule number 5, which is that the focus of the wedding is entirely on hosting, and being a good host slash hostess means that your focus is on pleasing your guests. This is, after all, a party that you are hosting for your closest family and friends. So the burden and the responsibility for entertaining them and pleasing them and doing all the right things for them rests on your shoulders. Let's debunk this one. First of all, it's not a party, it's a wedding. I wish I could think of the movie off the top of my head, but a guy keeps referring to the wedding as a party, and his fiance, the gal, absolutely loses it on him. It's a really funny scene, and if I do think of it, I'll send it in my next email. But anyway, this is not like planning a dinner party where you're having 12 of your close friends come over and you really kind of want to pull out all the stops and buy the nicest dinner possible and make an impeccable meal and splurge on some fancy wine. This is not a party. This is a wedding. So all of those rules about trying to please 250 people, I mean, give me a break. Those all go out the window. Second point here, unless you're charging admission for your wedding, which, wow, if you are, then please let me know because I've never heard of anyone doing that. You're not having guests pay for a ticket to come to your wedding. You are the one footing the bill. So obviously, we are going to go out of our way somewhat to reasonably accommodate our guests, but that does not mean that you need to go completely broke in the process. Don't worry about what people will think if X, Y, Z fill in the blank. What if people judge us for making them wait a couple of hours between the reception and the ceremony? Maybe we should come up with some kind of entertainment option or pay for transportation. No, you don't need to do that. Another one, what if people think we're cheap because they have to pay for drinks because we've done a cash bar like we just talked about? Who cares? If it's not in your budget to buy a million people drinks all night, then don't do it. What if someone is offended by our non-religious ceremony? It doesn't matter. I know that's kind of glossing over every situation, which I don't mean to do because I do feel you and I do know that situations get complicated and just can feel really heavy and burdensome and be a source of anxiety. But please, by all means, throughout the planning process, take a step back, take a deep breath. This is not about impressing your guests and impressing your friends and family and accommodating every single person's wishes and desires. That's going to be impossible. So get over that now and just accept the fact that the focus here is on you and your partner and in celebrating your wedding with your loved ones. That goes right back to the very beginning of today's show. It is so simple. This is about your commitment to one another and celebrating that with all of your loved ones. That's it. So keep it really, really simple. And pinch yourself every time it crosses your mind what someone is going to think if you do X, Y, or Z. And next up, the wedding etiquette rule that kind of drives me nuts. Well, they all do, but this one in specific are old-fashioned, quote, rules about who pays for what. Okay. Look, we're a long ways away from when the bride's father would give the groom's father farm animals in exchange for taking his daughter off of his hands. Now, I don't mean to joke because I know that cultures do different things, and that's completely fine. I'm literally talking about pioneer times in the United States when it was customary to find a good farm boy to marry your daughter off to and give his family a cow in exchange. Old-fashioned rules about the bride's family paying for the wedding and the groom's family paying for the rehearsal dinner, those at this point have pretty much gone by the wayside, and that's a good thing. Again, I'm not suggesting that this specific breakdown of who pays for what never happens anymore. Back to our earlier conversation about your specific culture and location and family traditions within your family specifically, of course, those traditional financial roles, they might apply to your situation. I'm merely suggesting that if you are, for example, a young woman who's engaged and you're sitting there and assuming that your parents will pay for the wedding without having an explicit conversation with your mom and dad, I would recommend right now prioritizing that you have a meeting ASAP with your parents to make sure that you're all on the same page. Because again, these old-fashioned rules about the bride's parents picking up the tab for the wedding are not as common as they used to be. Most couples who I work with via this podcast finance some, if not most, of the wedding plans themselves. That could be a commentary. Maybe it's our generation or the characteristics of podcast listeners in general, or a combination of the two. But the bottom line is, it's definitely not safe to assume that your parents will be footing the bill for your dream wedding without having an outright conversation with them about who will be paying for what. And the same thing goes, in that example, the groom's family. At one point in time, it was considered wedding law that the groom's family pay for the rehearsal dinner. That is not the case. So before you go out and reserve your favorite fanciest restaurant for 75 of your closest family, thinking that your future husband, his family is going to be picking up that tab, that's not the way it works anymore. So go ahead and take those old school, you know, beliefs about who pays for what and be really careful that you're having a candid conversation with your family and anyone involved in paying for the wedding so that you're all on the same page. And let's wrap up today's show with a much more lighthearted topic, which is wearing traditional wedding clothes. So traditional wedding clothes used to mean a white-ish dress and some variation of a tuxedo. I know in last week's episode, we talked all about wedding dress shopping. And for lots of us, that automatically means a white-ish dress that comes from a wedding dress boutique or store. If the thought of wearing or shopping for a traditional wedding dress just doesn't really quite feel authentically you, then by all means, expand your definition of what a wedding dress looks like and where it should be bought from. Colorful gowns in really bold, punchy colors have been gaining in popularity in the past years, and that trend seems to be accelerating. I also love the idea of wearing a non-wedding dress altogether for your big day, especially if you're going for a more casual celebration. If you're planning and you never step foot in a wedding dress store, that's totally fine. You can get a dress that is beautiful and makes you feel beautiful, and you will look like $1 million on your wedding day. That dress does not have to come from a quote wedding dress store. It can come from any store that you love to shop at. And the exact same thing goes for the gentleman's apparel. Long gone are the days of expecting to find the groom in some form of tuxedo. And for tons more details on creative wedding day fashion options for the groom, be sure to tune in to the episode dated April 8th on wedding day fashion for the groom and the groomsmen. Ooh, that was a long one, a good one. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope that our conversation today gives you the confidence and the reassurance to take a step back and look at some of these, quote, wedding laws and kind of readjust things, tailor them to suit your situation, and know and trust that you can make decisions that feel best for you. And you don't need to be worried about the judgment of others. As long as you're being a good person and you're being considerate and you're sticking true to you and your partner, I think you have a lot of freedom to do what feels best to the two of you. Thank you again for tuning in. If you have not yet subscribed to receive Wedding Planning Podcast emails, please head over to the website. You will see a sign up to receive show updates, special offers, all the fun behind the scenes, and so much more. Our website again, weddingplanningpodcast.co. Cheers to you, and I can't wait to chat again soon. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of the Wedding Planning Podcast. For details on any links and resources mentioned in today's show, be sure to take a peek at the show notes on your mobile device. You can also head over to weddingplanningpodcast.co for a complete library of past episodes and to sign up for weekly show notes and resources delivered straight to you via email. Until next time, have a great day. Happy planning, and I can't wait to chat again soon. Cheers!